Namaste. So, again, yoga is different from religion. Religion is a belief. And belief can make you happy, it's good, okay? If you are satisfied, as there is a line in Savitri often misquoted, the denizens of the mental world, when Savitri looks at them, she says, they tell her, we have fixed belief, and they tell her, write your name in the book of the elite, and this is our credo and our credential. We belong to this sect. So Savitri says, no, I can't stay here. I seek my soul. So they say, oh, there is something called a soul. Is there someone who still seeks a soul? So then there is a very beautiful line Savitri tells them. She says, happy who stand on faith as on a rock. Something like in this hurrying tread of time. Happy who stand on faith as on a rock. But I cannot stay here. These people don't write. One liner quotes. But I cannot stay here, for I seek my soul. So she is seeking her soul. It is in book 7, canto.
I think happy.
Happy who stand on faith as on a rock. So this is okay. This is one part. I just read those few lines, which, because since we mentioned, it's worth reading. Why? Because these lines come up and people say, oh, I have faith. Yes, faith is a starting point. Faith must lead to knowledge, not mental knowledge, of course, the knowledge that comes born of true experience. So Savitri says, happy are men anchored in unfixed belief. Happy are they who in this chaos of things, this coming and going of the feet of time, can find the single truth, the eternal law. Untouched they live by hope and doubt and fear. This is one kind of state. Happy are men anchored on fixed belief in this uncertain and ambiguous world. You see, it has the ring of Sri Krishna. Anityam masukham lokam bhajasvamam. In this uncertain and ambiguous world, he has slightly modified it, since we are talking about it. Anityam asukham, he says ambiguous. It's a mixed lot. Let's not exaggerate, that's all sorrow. Or who have planted in the heart's rich soil one small grain of spiritual certitude. Happiest who stand on faith as on a rock, but I must pass, leaving the ended search, truth's rounded outcome firm, immutable, and this harmonic building of world facts, this whole harmonic building, oh, this happened because there is karma, this happened because, and there's the end of the story. Everything is explained away by, in a system of belief. This ordered knowledge of apparent things, here I can stay not, for I seek my soul. So this is where religion begins to melt into spirituality, where the seeking becomes true, active, real, living. So when this happens, challenges come. That's not an easy part. If you are happy with the religion, with some kind of belief, it's okay. People say that, they live their normal life. They eat, drink, are merry. At the same time, they go to temple, they pray, they worship. Sometimes they have a little bit in the home. They do some puja, homam. Some mantra chanting, whenever they are in difficulty, they go to a pandit and the pandit does some ritual. I'm talking of the best of religions, which is okay, the Sanatana Dharma. I'm not talking of the worst. So, because that's not even a religion anymore. But even there, see, the religion part is one part. But when you say, no, this deity who is outside, I must discover inside, then yoga begins. Faith is fine, but I want to know, I want to see, I want to touch, feel, smell the divine. Hear the divine. Then I want to become one with the divine. That's when yoga. And then a number of things come in which are not easy. And one of them is mastery of the ego and desire. So this thing about desire, some people say, as I am told, I don't know who says, that you must satisfy desires little, because if you suppress them, there will be a problem. It will come out at an old age in some other way. Now this is beautifully explained in the Gita, though they derive this largely from something in the Gita, which mother has spoken about. What does the Gita say? It says, Arjun, you are trying to suppress your urge to fight. This will not be helpful because what can coercion prevail? Coercion cannot prevail over nature. Nature will come out. So many people quote this part. And once mother was also asked about this, she gave a beautiful explanation. She in fact said, no, nature can be changed. So this is one part. So then, how to understand this? Because Sri Krishna is saying at the same time, master, desires and ego. He is saying it. And he is saying that if you coerce your nature, it won't work out. Things will come out. So the reconciliation comes. He gives us a process. He says, when you withdraw the senses from objects of desire, but the subjective cause is the mind. That's how Sri Krishna explains it. And you let the desires enjoy the rasa of the desire in the mind. Then that is called as mithyachar. And that not only leads us nowhere, it can be dangerous. So mithyachar is where externally you are controlling, restraining. Some of the sannyasis particularly, people living in the world anyways, desires, regulated, unregulated, keep flowing. But sannyasis, this is the danger. That's why mother says sometimes they can be very dangerous. Because they harbor many things inside. Outwardly, they have restrained. You can do it by will. You can't say they are bad people that way. Well, they are trying something. But they don't understand the mind may continue to play. And that is what is the story of Shukdev and Vyas Rishi. So when both father and son are going crossing a river, through a bridge. So there is an observation that Vyas makes that, you know, the girls there, women bathing on the ghat, suddenly when they say Vyas, they begin to adjust their pallu. And when Shukdev passes, they don't care. So he asks, what is the reason? He says, I also don't have such things. He says, no. The discovery is within him, there is a seed still of desire which they respond to. You see how the Gita says, what is that? Somebody would remember that he who has love of God, neither he irritates anybody, nor others are irritated by him. Now, you need not get irritated by someone. But how is it that others won't get irritated by you? Because within us, that is what perfection is. That the seed of desire is gone. Now, when the seed of desire is gone, nobody reacts. Nobody responds. In Zen story, it is put like that, that, you know, a person is crossing, a master is crossing the pond or the river, which is in spate. He sees a young, beautiful girl in difficulty and he takes the girl on the shoulder and crosses. And the disciples are shocked. 3 days they are wondering. 4th day, the master says, what is your problem? He says, see, we don't understand your action. He says, how could you? You are harboring the desire for the girl. So you think that because I have picked up, there is desire in me. But that's not the case. I have dropped the girl there on the shore and you are still carrying her in the mind. So this carrying in the mind is what is dangerous. So what is the process then? Restraining merely is not enough. Mind has to be conquered. How to conquer it? Actually, the Gita gives us a process even for that. First step is buddhi. Above the mind, somebody may remember, beyond indriyani, you know, it goes beyond the indriya, there is the mind. Beyond the mind, there is the buddhi. Beyond the buddhi is the great self. So, just as indriyas are absorbed in the mind must be absorbed in the buddhi. Buddhi must be able to, everything we must refer to the buddhi. So first step in mastery of desire is don't justify. One of the justifications is precisely this, that we can satisfy it little by little. But first we must understand, desire, freedom does not mean, freedom from desire does not mean that one is not, I will not eat outside as it is called. I will not go where there is a woman. I will not talk to her. Of course, there are different stages. Maybe at some stage it may be required. Shobhinda says that when we are very crude, when the consciousness is very crude, it may really slip. then you need such to form a fence, and that fence may be formed by the rule of somebody else, or you form the fence yourself. Because if you go to a hotel and I remember one very strange incident. I had gone with someone had called me for a long, long back, maybe a couple of decades and more than that, in Bangalore. And the person took me to a hotel. He was fond of going to big hotels and all. Earlier, I used to have this typical, socialistic thing. No, you should, why should you? And this rich people's den. That's, anyways, all that went away after coming in contact. So when I went there, then something which I had never experienced before, that they had this, music is okay, people play music, but also some kind of dance was going on. Not a bad dance, but nevertheless, a woman was dancing and it was like, how can you do this and display it? And then I realized that there is still in me something which is wanting to look at that side. And then I understood that, well, this is what it means, what is truly mastery. And you can't do it forcibly. You have to use your buddhi. You can't justify. That's why it is Shurasya Dhara. Shurasya Dhara is, no, I am always taught. Shurasya Dhara is, don't, you can't swing to extremes. I'll never eat outside. That's one extreme. I'll indulge. Everything is fine in the name of God. No. Shurasya Dhara is that you are always vigilant and aware. Mother defines vigilance as the ability to turn everything into an opportunity for progress. So this is what it would mean. It does not mean, again, Shrivinda says, equality doesn't mean a blur indifference that I'll go, I'll eat whatever is given on my plate, I'll make no choice, I'll take it as prasad. Don't do all this. Shrivinda says it doesn't mean that I'll eat saltless food and mix sweet in it and it's fine. If you have no option, eat it. It should not affect you. But if you have an option, it's not that if you put a little salt in it, you have gone fallen down from yoga. That's not it. You know the difference and distinction, but you should not crave for it. So what is the sign of desire? Craving. Shrivinda uses the word craving, soul of desire. So desire is not about eating food in a restaurant or eating food. There are different kinds of food. Okay, emotional food, vital food people take. Rakshasas take all that food. What it means is that craving is the sign of lust. You'll see even the life of certain rishis and you can't understand how they engaged in certain actions. Again, we can't use that as a justification. That's why Shurasya Dhara. When Parashar Rishi has a progeny through Matsyagandha, later Satyavati, it was not out of craving that he was looking for somebody and went into the boat, and it was a different movement. We must understand. Craving, restlessness, urge to satisfy, gratify, that is desire. It's not about the object. And that's, I think I have told this earlier in left-hand tantra, how they practice. So this is one part. So craving, restlessness is the sign that desire is active. Then second part is that buddhi, never to justify it. There is desire, acknowledge it. There is a difference between acknowledging and indulging. Mother, I am having a very strong urge to meet this person who gratifies my senses, gratifies my emotions. Acknowledge it. Now, what is suppression? Outwardly you are not doing, but mind is moving in that realm. You acknowledge there is in me this desire, this wish, this want, this craving. So what do I do? Now, next step, mother says, is offer it. She uses very interestingly in this, there in Collected Works of the Mother, volume 10. And that's why she says, do not try to be among the holies. Bear your own burden of the anti-divine. It's not, and then she says, it does not mean you have to indulge. Anyways, nobody stops indulging just because you have this idea in the head. People end up indulging. That's a different story. But don't justify that. Well, because in yoga of transformation, these things come out and mother has said, little, you can indulge. Say, I indulged. Oops, I fell again. You see, St. Augustine, that's why Ishwabhita speaks about grace coming to St. Augustine. And what was his prayer at 35? The man, if you read his life, and his prayers later on are such beautiful psychic prayers. I have read them. And Sri Aurobindo is immortalized, and Sri Aurobindo names him. And what does he say? He says, St. Augustine would pray, Lord, grant me chastity, but not yet. This double thing comes in yoga. Everybody goes through it. That there is a part which wants to indulge and there is the part which is wanting to be free. This is a tussle. Everybody has their share. There is nobody ready-made transformation product buy in the market on sale or display in Shabda. It doesn't work like that. Everybody goes through their struggle. The degree is different. And then every time you reject it from one part, it goes into another part. You reject it from the mind, it will go into the emotion. Suddenly your emotion being will be hit. And you won't know what has hit you. Then you reject from the emotion, suddenly the life energy, the lower vital, it will just jump up, startled. Because roots of certain desires like sexuality are in the body. The body will react like a mechanical nerve. So you can't just shy away your eyes and say, no, no, I don't have anything. You will see it. And then you will offer it. Maybe it may not succeed. Once, twice, 10 times, 1,000 times. But never to justify, to see it for what it is. Then slowly you will see that it goes away from the body. Then where does it go? Subconscious. When you feel, it's all clear. Before subconscious is the environment consciousness. And suddenly it attacks you. You were wondering, you thought you were a free man. So you have to keep rejecting. Then subconscious, from where it will spring surprise, especially at nights. Night is when the Asuri Maya is very prabal. So people try several methods. For instance, playing the music, mother's music, Savitri music. There are different things people try. Praying to her, becoming a little more conscious, vigilant. Again, success will not come immediately. But slowly, if one perseveres, the goal should be clear, then you reject that also. Reject. Don't justify nor get into guilt. It's nature. You have to learn to see that this nature. If you get into guilt, then you cover it up. If you start justifying, then it'll endlessly. Desire can never be satisfied fully. Temporarily, yes, but it will come back again. Of course, in Tantra, there are procedures about when you have a momentary lull of desire, and you have great books on that by great acharyas who became Bhagwan. I don't want to write all that. I am aware of that. But these are not transformational yogas. So, then after a time, even people try different things. Even while they are indulging in desire, I'll give an example of food. You're having a strong craving and you're eating food. You just could not. You just ended up on the table and taking that morsel and putting in your mouth. Now, you are enjoying the food. At that point of time, keep thinking of the divine and that it's going to the divine. You'll see that you'll stop enjoying. But a different rasa will start coming to you. Now, all these are, and it can go to any extent. Even in activities which are most difficult. Because then there is no pleasure. You realize that mind is the one which was extracting pleasure, not the senses. Senses, poor fellows, were only slaves. Mind wanted the enjoyment. That's why mind is the rasagrahana. We blame the senses. Indriya nigraha. Senses are not bad guys. They are only poor fellows are steeds. Who is driving the steed? The mind. So mind wants to enjoy. So it puts the sense at the service. Now you cut off the mind, turn the mind to God and see that very sensory joy will just vanish. And when you don't have that, because mind, the joy part is in the mind, there is an act but no joy. So all kinds of things are there. But anyways, ultimately, if you keep persevering, you reject, you offer, you reject, you offer. You reject, you offer. Then slowly, step by step, they will disappear. For subconscious parts, when they are coming back like that, suddenly, most unexpectedly, most irrationally, then japa works very well for that. So japa is another thing which helps. So you see how Sri Ramakrishna would do, somebody would touch his, one lady which was very strict about Kamani Kanchan. If somebody would touch, suddenly a lady once touched his feet and he would suddenly put Ganges water on top and, you know, mother, 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 he would remind, because he was so sensitive. Even you put a coin, money below the bed and he would come to know. Of course, that's a different yoga. Our yoga is yoga of transformation, where all these things have to go amul chul. Nothing has to remain. And in its place, something else comes. That is the other part. Romp was play of gods in time. That's how Shivindu describes in Savitri. What replaces this lower vital which is engaged in pleasure making? It changes into the play of gods in time. There is a joy, there is a laughter. Read Shivindu's humor. When he tells Nirodha, you have a boil in the nostril, you do this mantra, Om Tat Tat Tat, but he writes it T-O-T, not T-A-T. So Nirodha says, next day I tried, it didn't work. Oh, I forgot to tell you. You can't do it like this. You have to do it by four Brahmins must be present. So he says, where will I get Brahmins? He says, hold on, you are in too much of a hurry. Four Brahmins who don't have a pot belly and who are free from all sex thoughts. Nirodha says, tell me something easy. So look at the Shivindu is talking about words which normally you would. Why? Because he is completely free. But look at the humor. Amrit, have you kissed the girl? No, sir. What? Now, see, who can do that? Who is free inside completely? It's not that you are indulging in this kind of talk, but when there is the play, a little romp of gods in time. There is a laughter, he is conveying a profound truth, and the disciple, of course, there is an action on the disciple and he is freed. So this is the way desires have to be got rid of. It's a long task, especially the surface being is caught. When one is early in the yoga, it's very good to try to put some embargo on oneself. It's very good. Like, for instance, I'll not go to market, I'll not, you know, eat food outside. All this is fine. In the beginning, it is helpful. When nature is very crude, I'll not touch the mobile, I'll not, you know, things where one may likely, this little bit of self-discipline. And the process will be the same, trying, rejection, offering. Sign will be craving. So, then the next step is that as you begin to master more and more, it's like a baby is in the cradle in the beginning. Then he goes out of the house, but somebody is keeping a guard. And then after some time, the baby has grown up, he goes into the world and is a free. So this is the process, that as you grow, these rules begin to fall off. If there is a need to apply rules, which is fine, it means it's a beginning stage where one has to be careful. Nothing wrong with that. At the same time, even when you are completely free, it may be somebody seeing it may wonder. As Swami Vivekananda, people used to complain about him. He would go with women, he would stay with anybody when he went to America. You read his letters, people sent all kinds of news. Are, he is staying in this woman's house, he is staying in that woman's house. Sharadama told that what Thakur had told about him. He was untouched, absolutely untouched. Even if he has tasted wine, Champaklalji for that matter has tasted wine. You are still caught up into vegetarianism. It's okay at one stage. But as you rise, all this becomes your free. They drop off. Then you are neither dependent on it, nor you are, you know, in a dogmatic way tied. Oh, somebody is a non-vegetarian, he is a papi. You don't see like that. The whole view changes, understanding changes. So this is how the desires have to be. It's a long journey. First step is not to justify. Use the buddhi over the mind. And buddhi over the buddhi is the great self. Shobindu says, from the essays on the Gita, where there is a phrase called param drishtva. It goes unnoticed normally. It goes, okay, when you have seen God. Shobindu says, the final knot goes only when you are absorbed in the divine. That is true. No doubt about it. So it's a long journey. It's okay. There is no nothing like conscious indulgence or consciously raising desires that he has warned against. Let me go and see whether I have desire or not. Then that's the path of experiments with truth, which is not our path. We are not Gandhian. Gandhi tried this kind. Nigraha followed by strange perverted ways of indulgence. And why I say this in the passing? What's problem with Gandhi if he tried? It's not about Gandhi. Think about the two women. I mean, how can you be so insensitive? You are doing experiment. You want to see whether you have a sexual desire again or not. You are, you know, sleeping around with two naked women. You may not even, let's say, you may not have had. But they are young women. What happens to them? So this is how one has to be. That it's not about experimenting and trying to find out. Let me see whether I have overcome or not. Life will give us enough opportunities. Don't worry. None can reach heaven who has not passed through hell. The problem is, when we are in hell, we think we are in heaven. And heaven after a while becomes boring and we think we are in hell. This we must know how to discern. Namaste.